Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Grant and Danny, live and on the air on this Wednesday on 106.7 The Fan, September 23 days old. Happy birthday, Mom. Hope all of you are doing well and ready for a good 4 hours of banter and conversation. 11:30 today, Brian Baldinger is going to be on the show. One of our favorite football guests. We're going to link up with him yesterday. Got pushed to today, but that means good news for our show on this Wednesday. And at 1 o'clock, Dustin Fox, who does radio on 92.3, The Fan in Cleveland. He does a great job breaking down the Browns, former Ohio State player, played in the NFL. He'll be with us at 1 to preview this weekend's opponent. Danny, how are we doing this morning?
Pretty good, my friend. The Nats can't lose. Four straight. Here they come, right? Just like last year. They're going to rip off 110 games of, 670 baseball and get themselves a World Series. Oh, I'm told the season's over next week. Bummer. But they're playing well. Great basketball game last night with Denver up 20 with 10 minutes to go. All of a sudden, they were up 4 or 6, whatever it was, with a Lakers run. That was wildly entertaining. And we do have to start, I'd like to start real quick. Rest in peace, Gale Sayers. You know how, like, when you argue sports with older generations and you're arguing for the guys that you see now, right? For me, it's like I'll argue about Montana being the greatest I ever saw with my kid who's going to have some guy that I've never even heard of yet who's, like, on a playground somewhere as the greatest or whatever, right? Gale Sayers was one of the guys that my dad will tell you was the greatest. That guy. He didn't want to hear about Barry Sanders or Emmitt Smith or anybody else. Gale Sayers to him. Like, he's a Johnny Unitas Gale Sayers Stan, I think I'm using that correctly, but guys like that, part of that era. So Sayers was incredible, career cut short with injuries, but one of those guys that was just electric with the football in his hands. Rest in peace.
Only played 7 years. 7 years and like 5 years where he actually played. I mean, the last couple of years of his career were him getting a combined, I think, 36 rushing attempts. But in those five seasons, he was dominant enough. From 1965 through 1969, they saw enough that he was a Hall of Famer, 4 Pro Bowls, 5 All-Pros, All-60s team, AP Offensive Rookie of the Year. And rest in peace, you're right, one of the more popular players of all time. Gale Eugene Sayers passing away, which is a shame. But I mean, how many guys can say that over the course of a five-year span, basically, you did enough that you made the Hall of Fame? That's what it was. It was five seasons, and he got into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, just he was the guy, like in high school, right, where you look at a bunch of people running around that are normal, and there's one guy that's so special who's in super speed motion or super fast, or you put him at quarterback or punt return or free safety and whatever it is, and he just dominates the game. That's what Sayers was, but at the NFL level. I mean, the rushing yards, the receiving, the punt returns, he was just ridiculous. With the football in his hands, Matt. And you're right. It was 5 years basically of just top level, incredible play, and that was enough.
You mentioned the Nationals, so we could start there after they swept a doubleheader right here on 106.7 The Fan yesterday. 5-1 win over the Phillies in Game One. Austin Voth was the story, the ever popular 7-inning complete game for Austin Voth. It goes down as a CG on his baseball reference page, though.
Very
three
normal.
Hits, one run earned, one walk. 7 strikeouts. This was the best start of Austin Voth's career, and you're seeing a little bit now in 2020 of what you saw in 2019, where he came on in the end of the season. And because of that, they kind of felt okay going into next year. Now, I'm not going to be fooled and plan on him being in my rotation. I think as a first division team that plans on making the playoffs and getting to a World Series, which should be their goal next year, they'll be good enough to do that. You go into the year with Strasburg, Scherzer, Corbin, 1, 2, and 3, whichever order you want. And then you'll have a fourth starter, ideally, I'm spending money, that's not on the team right now. And then the fifth starter is probably Joe Ross or Eric Fetty. Both and one of those two guys are your sixth and seventh guys. Like, that's my plan. That's what I'm doing. But I guess, theoretically, they could say, oh, we saw something we liked. He made two straight decent starts at the end of the season. But it's not enough for me. Good for him, though. He's worked really hard, and it paid off, and I'm sure it was a thrilling day for him. And he deserved it. I mean, he's dealt with a lot of bad outings, and he's worked hard, and he's stayed positive. And so to get the seven-inning, one-run, seven-strikeout game under his belt yesterday in game one of the doubleheader was good to see.
Yeah, it's one of those I get frustrated by this sort of thing, and I probably shouldn't, but it kind of fits the theme, right? All of a sudden, that now that they're out of it, basically, mathematically all but eliminated, I guess there's still a very slim hope that they could get into this, you know, giant expanded playoff field. But Anibal Sanchez turning in great starts all of a sudden. Austin Voth has a couple straight, and it's I'm glad you're doing that. Could you have done that a few weeks ago, too, when this was still in doubt? Could you have maybe, I don't know, not pitched to a 10 ERA, you know what I mean? Just not had the team in games at all, and we'd be having a different story this season. We'd be talking about what they were doing in spite of not having Steven Strasburg and Howie Kendrick and some of their injuries. We'd be talking about a great story of one more ride for these veterans. It's too little too late, quite frankly. But personally, for him and his career trajectory, I'm with you. I'm hoping, and these baseball guys here with Washington are way too smart, I think, to fall for it. Sort of the sexiness of two good starts
to me,
for a guy that is
falling for it. It's a justification of the money they're allocated to go do things. You know, if the learners say, oh, we've got Voth, he pitched well at the end of the year. Like, you don't think they wanted to go upgrade their rotation this year instead of Ross, Fetty, and Voth? I'll bet they did. But with Ross pitching okay and Voth pitching okay and Fetty flashing from time to time, they might say, no, those guys are enough. We don't need to get another arm. And that's my concern. It's not that Rizzo's going to go into the room and say, hey, Austin Voth's a fourth starter. He knows what Austin Voth is. But are you going to be allowed to go upgrade the team when it can be justified? It's easy for me to sit on my couch, Danny, and say, that guy is not a fourth starter in Major League Baseball. But I'm not paying for the fourth starter that's going to cost $14 million a year.
Yeah, so at no point, I guess what I'm trying to say is, at no point do I want anybody to think, well, we can get away with that because we're going to spend money somewhere else, right? Some of these guys are coming off the books, and we'll have a little bit of money to play around with, and how are we going to allocate things? Some salaries are going up. We've got some, you know, the $35 million man, the Strasburgs and the Scherzers and stuff. Can we get away with one of these guys making however many starts for us? And I don't want anybody to be convinced or think there's a sliver of hope that that answer is yes. But you're right. I mean, the baseball folks are too smart to know that. But it's maybe about, like, if we crunch some numbers in a certain way and have a remainder and, you know, weight certain other averages, maybe the analytics guys can come up with a data spreadsheet that says, well, we could still win 89.4 games if Austin Voth makes 14 starts. No, thank you.
In game two, the lineup just came to play. 8 runs on 9 hits for the Nats. In fact, Davey Martinez used 5 pitchers. Only Kyle Finnegan, inning in a third, 2-hit scoreless, didn't give up a run. Paolo Espino, Kyle McGowan, Wander Suero, Daniel Hudson, all charged with runs. Hudson's was unearned, it's worth noting. But you had one pitcher who didn't give up a run that was used, and you still get the win, and it was in dramatic fashion, a walk-off homer. Yadiel Hernandez, who's been in the minor leagues a ton and played a ton of games outside of the United States, gets his signature moment in Major League Baseball, a 2-run shot, down a run in the 8th inning in extras. You start automatically with the runner at second, obviously. The Nats go 4-for-11 with runners in scoring position, so they sweep the doubleheader. In that game, Juan Soto in the 3rd inning, a 3-run shot, his 12th home run of this sprint of a season. Soto, an incredible year, 3.45 average and 11.64 OPS.
First homer of September, though. Just he hadn't gotten pitches to hit.
He pulled off.
Yeah, which happens, by the way. There are ebbs and flows, but he's getting walked all the time and, you know, still hitting the ball hard. He's still incredible. That doesn't change, but just kind of, you know, just noteworthy, I suppose, as this team kind of plays out the string. But he's still outstanding. I mean, I think he's now qualified, GP. Maybe I'm wrong with enough games, but he's like first in in the National League, I think, in like average, OPS, just any measure of an offensive player, he's the best. So, yeah, he's ours.
And he's going to be ours for a while until, free agency very likely, and then he'll be someone else's. But in the meantime, he gets to carry the Washington Nationals, and post-Harper, it became Rendon. Post-Rendon, this is now Soto's team. Soon enough, maybe it'll be Trey Turner's if they can lock him up as well. But he's just a blast to watch, and he's special. So we get another few days of these Nationals. They have not quit. I mean, champions die hard. They're not going out without a fight. They have faced elimination the last 2 days and gone 3-0 in that time. And maybe most importantly, Danny, they've kept the Phillies from getting into the playoffs, it looks like. Philly
Sorry
could still make it with some help. But it looks like Bryce Harper and a very talented Phillies team that came into the season hell-bent on making the postseason before they found out that the playoffs expanded. There's no excuse for this roster not to get in, but their bullpen ERA for the season over 7. They're blowing leads left and right. They traded for Brandon Workman. He's been a disaster for them. And the Phillies now 27-29 after this string of losses to the Nats over the last couple of days. They might miss out on the playoffs.
The averages and like stats against the Phillies bullpen would be the MVP of the Major League Baseball season. You know what I mean? Like, what opponents are doing to their raggedy, terrible, awful bullpen would be like one of the greatest players in baseball history. And that's what the entire league is doing to them. That's why they're not in the playoffs. They've led in pretty much 90% of their games and should have won way more. And they have a great chance of missing the playoffs because of that.
Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. Next, Brandon Scherff is hurt. He will miss time. He's in a contract year as a franchise-tagged guard. Is it time to make the decision one way or the other on Brandon Scherff? You're listening to The Fan.
Guys, Grant and Danny, for our pals at Window Nation, we love Window Nation, okay? We would not be endorsing Window Nation if we didn't have Window Nation in our hearts. We love these guys. They're so good at what they do. Let them help you the way they've helped Grant, the way they've helped me, and so many homeowners. Make your home more comfortable this fall with Window Nation Windows. You get 50% off all style windows, zero payments, zero down, zero interest for 2 years. Go to windownation.com to schedule an in-home estimate or do a virtual one online and get the best pricing of the year.
866-90-NATION, 866-90-NATION, or go to windownation.com to set up an in-home estimate or online quote today. You can lock in that zero down, zero payment, zero interest for 2 years and get 50% off all style windows. The offer is only good for a limited time, so call today and tell them Grant and Danny sent you. It's windownation.com.
Nationals down 7-6 in extra innings, bottom of the eighth. Workman sets and fires. Swinging a high drive, right field deep. Harper going back to the warning track, to the wall. It's gone! Yadiel Hernandez wins it. The 32-year-old rookie's first big league home run is a walk-off two-run shot, giving the Nationals a doubleheader sweep over the Phillies. Hernandez steps on home plate. They jump up and down to greet Hernandez. What a moment for the Nationals rookie.
It's a great story. 10 years older than a lot of rookies these days in Major League Baseball. Home run number one wins a game. That's your drive of the night brought to you by your local Honda dealer. Time to get your local Honda dealer for model year clearance pricing. See your local Honda dealer today. Danny, Brandon Scherff is going to miss games. The timeline is not exactly known. It sounds like upwards of 3, 5, 6 weeks, something in that range, a month plus potentially. But the point is that here we are, 3 games into 2020, and he is already hurt. He missed 5 games last year. He missed 8 games in 2018, and he missed 2 games in 2017. He played every game for his first 2 years, and in the 4 years since now, when this year ends, he will have missed almost, I would say, somewhat substantial time, certainly over the last 3 seasons. It might be too early to say this, and you tell me if you disagree, but unless he comes back and has a stretch of 9 or so games, let's say, that is the most dominant and impressive games he's played in Washington, I'm ready to move on. And it's not a negative thing against Brandon Scherff. He's franchise tagged. It's going to take close to $15 million a year or whatever it is to re-sign him at that position at this point. I'm not a big proponent of paying guards that kind of money anyway. I'm not quite on the Jay Gruden train where I disrespectfully refer to them as guards.
Guard.
But I'm not that far from that. I've told this story before. I remember being in Mike Shanahan's office one time when he called me in mad about something I'd said, and I was explaining why I thought that. And then we got off on a different tangent, and we started talking about his offensive line. And he basically explained to me why the guard position is just not that important to him in his zone blocking scheme. There are different ways of viewing offensive line play. I would say, as a general rule, I am not a huge proponent of making guard a major priority. I'd rather pay my tackles and my center than the guard position. Having said all that, though, it's not even about that. Brandon Scherff's great. When you draft a guy in the top five and he plays at a Pro Bowl level and he could make four Pro Bowls in the next 6 years, generally those are the guys you want to re-sign. It's why I advocated for trying to get a deal done this past offseason. But the bottom line with him is he's not available enough. He just gets hurt too much. And this is now four straight years, and it'll be three where he misses major time. I can't pay a guard that kind of money in the middle of a rebuild. Sorry, it's like paying a closer or something like that when I'm just not good enough at the major league level. So I've kind of made my decision on this. If he comes back and dominates, I'm willing to reevaluate. But for right now, I've decided this was the year where we were finding out are you paying him or not, and I've decided I'm not going to pay him.
Generally in sports talk radio, or sports talk in general, you're supposed to have these like strong convictions. Maybe they're hot takes, maybe they're not. You're supposed to stick to them. And you sort of never really admit that you're wrong. It's kind of the general convention, right? You get up there and you don't have to be accountable. You just sort of yell things. Well, that's ridiculous. It's primordial. It's smelly. You just yell whatever, right? I have been the opposite of that on Brandon Scherff. I have gone back and forth and back and forth on what the hell I want to do with Brandon Scherff. Right now, I'm with you in that I'm over it. And that's probably the wrong reaction because he got hurt. I don't know what about it is his fault or not, but we're here again. 14, not bad. You get a guy play 14 games, it's not the worst thing in the world. 8, 11, now the maximum he's going to play, it seems like, is, 11 or 12 games this year. I just can't do it. So right now, in my inconsistent view on what to do with Brandon Scherff, I may let him walk kind of a move. And I hate doing that because the whole point is you draft guys, they become core players, and you build your team around players where they give you an advantage. I just don't know how much of an advantage Brandon Scherff gives us over opponents in terms of the Washington football team if I'm making the decision. I'm probably going to let him go because the money's going to be huge, and I just can't do that. Not with where my team is at this point. And it's gonna sting when he signs somewhere else and is a road grader when he comes back to Washington and they beat our brains in. But I can't do it right now.
It doesn't help that he didn't have two great games when he was on the field to begin with, right? And he gave up a bad sack this past week before the injury. But that's going to happen, and I know what Brandon Scherff is. We were just talking about evaluating Austin Voth and not kind of getting tricked by recency. Similarly with Scherff, you can look at the last two games and the fact that he's given up a couple of sacks, and you can make whatever case you want to. Brandon Scherff's a really good guard. That's what he is. You know, people can pick nits and they can look at plays he doesn't make. If you study every guard in the NFL, those plays exist. You're chasing a ghost. If you're dinging him for those plays, that's fine. You got to go look at the other top guards in the league and ding them for their deficiencies as well. So he's a top 5 to 7 player at that position. I'd have no problem paying him at all if he played 16 games a season or close. You know, if the 1 year where he played 14 games, we missed a couple in 2017, was the year where he was hurt, no problem. But again, we're talking about missing half of the season, basically the last 2 years, and now hurt in week 3 for a third straight year. Unavailable for a major stretch. So it's just gotten to a point now where I'm not going to be in the business anymore of paying huge money to guys with bad injury histories. This team tried to do that for a few years, and it exploded in their face, and they were in the hospital with third-degree burns getting skin grafts. I'm tired of doing that. I'm not going to make my bed, throw into Jordan Reed and Jamison Crowder and keeping my fingers crossed that on Sunday they're going to be on the field. I understand that in this sport, guys are going to get hurt. But there's a difference between the fluke thing where someone gets hurt for the first time in a few years and a guy that just has a track record of not being available. And unfortunately, and Brandon Scherff has done nothing wrong by all accounts, good dude. We've enjoyed having him on the show in the past, and he's a good football player. He's just not available enough to make a highest-paid guard in football type, which is what you have to do if you're going to sign him at the end of this season. And I'm just not going to do it.
And beyond that, GP, let's say he was available all the time, and he was his normal self, which is, as you said, a really good guard. You're going to have to set the market with him. That's one of those things that would really sting me to do anyway, right? I wouldn't be that excited about it. I wouldn't be like, we got Sheriff back. Woo! You know, I wouldn't be giddy in that direction. When you add that in to how often he is injured, how often he does miss. And again, no one's blaming the guy. Stuff happens in football, especially on the interior. Guys get washed out and roll into your legs, and you get rolled up on a million times, and it stinks, and we're sort of, you know, killing the guy for it. And I feel badly about that, but it's the league. When you add those two factors in, that's kind of why I got this feeling in the pit of my stomach going, I just can't do this. I can't do this dance anymore.
So I actually would. I don't know that I would do that squealing thing that you just did, but I would actually be excited if he was available, and I would be pumped if he's on the field because he's one of your better players. And again, there's something to be said for the fact that you drafted and developed this guy on your own, and that's what the winning organizations do. And I think that there is an important element of paying guys that have grinded for you that other players, both in your own locker room and around the league, see. So if I draft you at 5 and you become what you were supposed to and you do everything right, Scherf has, and you become a multi-time Pro Bowler, you're going to get rewarded. So I think there's a lot of good that comes out of paying him. For me, it's just a matter of I cannot trust that you're going to play. It's too hard to have quality options on my bench that I can then plug in that don't miss a beat at that position. But we got to talk about the rest of the offensive line then, because it's already a problem. They already have major needs. They need a left tackle. They need a left guard. They might want to upgrade center. The only spots where they should feel okay right now, Sheriff at right guard, Moses at right tackle. And we're saying at the end of this season, maybe you move on from Brandon Sheriff. And that would mean then you add another lineman that you need at the pile. So we'll evaluate the rest of the offensive line next. Grant and Danny on 106.7 The Fan. If you'd like to chime in, you can. The AAA Always On Call listener lines are available for you at 800-636-1067 on Grant and Danny. Six-foot-five, 315-pound Brandon Sheriff is hurt. The 28-year-old from Denison, Iowa, a former number 5 overall pick 5 years ago in 2015, has had injury issues throughout his career. Started his first two seasons, 32 straight games, didn't miss any time. Then in 2017, missed 2 games. Over the last 2 years, he missed 8 and 5 games respectively. And now this year, he's already out and could miss upwards of a month. Nothing he did wrong. You get rolled up on as an offensive lineman. It's fairly unavoidable. But we've got a track record now of him being unable to stay on the field. And so the question becomes, he's on the franchise tag. They were debating paying him all offseason. They went back and forth in a negotiation. They couldn't get a deal done. But the hope was he'd play 16 games, make another Pro Bowl, and they'd pay him. It doesn't look like that's feasible. It doesn't seem plausible that you give him that money as much time as he misses after yet another injury. Here's what Sheriff has going for him, though, Danny. The rest of the line around him is not good. And so when you already know you're going to have to add a left tackle, very likely, barring some type of unforeseen developing second half from Jaron Christian, you're probably going to need a left guard unless Wes Martin breaks out and becomes a guy. Center, where Chase Roullier plays, he's kind of out of sight, out of mind. No one really talks about him. I think we all assume he's okay. But maybe you could do better than him. He's not making a Pro Bowl anytime soon. Right tackle Morgan Moses has played better this year than last year. But you don't have any other Pro Bowl types. You don't have any other players other than Sheriff on the offensive line that are among the top 10, 12, even 15 probably at their position. So that having been said, can you justify creating another need by letting him walk at a important position that's already not satisfactory?
Yeah, it becomes that much more of a premium, just to your point. Like, you think of the way different organizations, I mean, it's the nature of trading. It's the nature of capitalism. I've got more goats and you've got more grain. You know, let's work out a swap. It's a barter economy. And that's what it is. When you are weak in an area and you're about to make yourself weaker, which I'm advertising – or I'm subscribing to at this point for Washington, you're right. It becomes a kind of a dire situation. I think if things go according to their plan, and let's hear me out for a second. Let's say Haskins starts to play better and we all become convinced this is the answer. We got it. We don't have to worry about that. Then your first-round pick's a left tackle, in all likelihood, right? Or maybe your second-round pick is just because somebody else is special, but you get the point. You're going to be able to fill one that way. Maybe your third or fourth-round pick is a guard. Maybe a free agent right guard where you don't. It's no longer a premium thing. Next thing you know, you got yourself a rebuilt offensive line and you're ready to go into 2021. If it's not Haskins, let's say this the way he's playing now sort of continues in perpetuity and we are all admiring his leadership while they're getting their brains beaten into candidate open receivers, maybe your first-round pick's a quarterback. Now, who's protecting him? You got to go spend a boatload of money in free agency. I mean, the going rate for guards at this point, by the way, is no joke. I mean, you're looking at a total AAVs in the $12, $13, $14 million range. You know, these 50, 60, 70. Zach Martin signed an $84 million deal with $40 million guaranteed at the time of signing. This is no longer the you know, pluck someone off the scrap heap and plug them in because they fit your scheme. The Lichtensteigers of the world aren't getting calls now. I mean, this is a premium thing that you got to really pay for.
Well, and it's only going to get higher and higher priced because guys like Scherf, when you get franchise tagged, then demand to start the negotiation there. We went through this economics course with Kirk Cousins. They're doing it in Dallas now with Dak Prescott. Scherf's the highest paid guard in football right now as an AAV because he is fully guaranteed his $15.03 million this year. So Joe Thuney, $14.7 million. Brandon Brooks, $14 million. Zach Martin, Andrew Norwell, $14, $13.3. As you said, those guys all make that money, and Sheriff's going to want more after you tagged him. And I'm just not going to be in that business, barring a second half where he comes back and just mauls people. You know, gives up no pressures, is the best guard in football by all the grading, and ends up making another Pro Bowl. But if you look at salary cap room, the Washington football team is ranked fourth behind only the Browns, Jets, and Cowboys in terms of most space. And the Cowboys don't really count because they've got to sign Dak Prescott, so I wouldn't even keep them in that conversation. So it's really the Browns, the Jets, and then Washington. How about using some of that cap space and going and getting linemen? You knew you needed a left tackle this year. You chose not to do it. Do it. You knew you needed a left guard. You chose not to do it. Do it. You knew you needed a wide receiver. You chose not to do it. How about you spend that cash? And so I think they will this offseason. I think they kind of wanted to see what they had, particularly with Haskins, before they formulated their big picture planning. But we'll get into the first round, and if you have to go quarterback, and if Haskins is the guy later in the season. We don't have that answer yet. There's not enough intel at this moment. The rest of this, though, you can start to piece together because we've seen a lot. We've got plenty of intel, and we have years of sample on players like Brandon Scherff. He is really good. Someone should sign him for probably $11 or $12 million. That's a contender that needs a guard. I'm just saying, with his injury history, I can't justify it here. Let's go to line right. One on the AAA Always On Call listener lines. Michael is in Fredericksburg on Grant and Danny. Hey, Michael.
Gentlemen, how you doing today?
What's up, good. Buddy?
Good, good. Hey, so look, for me, it's not about the injury. It's not about Scherff. I think he's awesome. It's about right guard is the most jagged position on offense. If I have to pick, you know, hierarchy of importance, you know, what positions do I need all-stars and what positions do I need, you know, a replacement-level player, right guard is the most replacement-level player position there is. I can't see tying up the money on it.
I love that take. Whether agree or disagree, it's sort of a team-building philosophical thing, Jeeps. I appreciate the call, bro. I mean, it's one of those things where if you're going to start allocating in terms of team-building priority, a team like the Eagles, for example, now they're not getting off to a great start, but they're very analytically built. They will not spend, typically, on linebacker. That's one of the spots where they're going to go cheap, sort of in perpetuity. They'll spend on quarterback, a left tackle, corner, you know, some of the more premium positions. If you're ranking a list of premium positions in your starting 22, right guard may be among the lowest. And that's a pretty savvy way to do that. Now, it doesn't mean you never spend. It doesn't mean you never do it that way if you kind of look at your landscape. But it, to me, would be more of a luxury item for a team that's in a rebuild.
Yeah, wholeheartedly. And it's just kind of how I view the guard position. Now, there's some hyperbole there when we talk about it being essentially unimportant, right? To an extent, all the positions are vital. The play after Brandon Scherff got hurt, he gets replaced immediately by Wes Schweitzer. The Cardinals run a game, and Schweitzer gets beat like a drum. A free rusher comes, gets a clean shot on Haskins, who throws too high on a second down for Logan Thomas. And after that, the Redskins, the Washington football team has to end up punting on a 4th-and-2. That matters. You know, teams immediately attacked that position. If you have a weak guard, then Aaron Donald is going to eat your lunch. J.J. Watt is going to dominate you. There are players in this league that see that on Thursday and Friday, and they say, okay, I'm now going to pummel you. That's going to happen. But to his point, would I rather spend that money at wide receiver? Yes. At tackle? Yes. Would I rather spend that money at running back? I'm not sure. Left guard or center, potentially. Tight end, absolutely. So it's just not that high in the pantheon of things to do, things to spend on. And I got money. But if you want to take up next year potentially $14 million of my cap space on the guard position, you better be a guy I know is going to play at a high level for 16 games. 800-636-1067 is the number. Brian Baldinger joins the show at 11:30. He's a former lineman who grades line play a lot. He'd actually be great to ask this, and we will do that with him. You know, guards getting paid so much more. Why have they become more valuable? Is it worth it to sink that kind of money into that position? We'll take more of your calls. We'll hit our NFL power rankings as we continue on Grant and Danny. Fan, how about this first hour? Old school, throwing it back. We're talking offensive line play on G&D.
Run the ball, Hawks.
Third highest pressure percentage in football against Dwayne Haskins to this point. It's not necessarily Jaron Christian at left tackle or Wes Martin at left guard that we're discussing, though. It's the future of Brandon Scherff after he got hurt. The plan until Sadiq Charles is ready, nobody knows when that's going to be, is what you saw in game, I would imagine, which is Martin stays at left guard. The other of the guards that was competing for that job, Wes Schweitzer, plays right guard for Brandon Scherff. But they drafted Sadiq Charles out of LSU, Danny. Presumably they thought he could compete for the left tackle job. That never materialized. He also can play some guard. In fact, our buddy Logan Paulson, who now does pre and post here on 106.7 The Fan, ahead of and after every single Washington football team game, when we had him on after the draft and we asked him to study the film on all these guys, he came back and told us he wasn't sure if Charles could play tackle, but he thought he would be a solid NFL guard. So one way or the other, I'd love to see him get onto the field. This is a huge opportunity for him now.
Yeah, that's right.
And frankly, if he can't play in this group on this offensive line and he's healthy, then that's a really bad sign. I'm not sure that there's a better place to be as a fourth or a fifth or a sixth round offensive lineman in the NFL right now than in Washington if you're a lineman, because
well,
they are desperate
this.
For
yeah.
answers.
We spoke about this with a number of positions on their roster where normally a fourth rounder out of Liberty, shouldn't have any chance to crack your rotation in a wide receiver core. But Gandy Golden does, because the guy in his way is Dontrell Inman. He's got a chance to catch NFL passes, and this is the only place where that would probably be the case. Same thing with Sadiq Charles. Same thing with Schweitzer or Martin or anybody else. They probably wouldn't be getting chances for anybody that had designs of competing. But for this group, it's sink or swim, man. You're going to get an opportunity you wouldn't get in most other places. You're 100% right.
If you look at the depth chart for this group right now, they do have young options as backups, and maybe you give them a look later in the year. The problem becomes when you're trying to figure out what Dwayne Haskins is at the same time as trying to get those guys reps. If you're really using this season to determine what Haskins is, which it seems like is what they want to do, then you need to give him a shot to stand flat-footed in the pocket and make some throws. Line 2, DJ is in D.C. on the AAA Always On Call listener line. What's up, DJ?
What's going on, fellas? How you doing, man?
Hey, buddy.
Sheriff, former Pro Bowler, often injured, and so far this year has given up 3 sacks in 1.5 games. The juice is not worth the squeeze for the type of money that he wants. I understand we have knees all over the line, but the type of money that he wants, I need to see something. And right now what I'm seeing, 2 of those sacks, he was basically thrown in the backfield. That's horrible. Especially for the dollar amount that he's commanding, that is absolutely horrible and unacceptable. He is nowhere near his Pro Bowl form. Nowhere near. I'll take a mistake from a rookie than a bad going established former Pro Bowl guy that wants a whole lot of money that's not producing.
I think that's a smart call,
all I got.
Largely.
No, appreciate you. Thank you.
I mean, the one thing I will say, I guess I have 2 points to that call. The first thing I would say is, if you look generally at the Pro Bowl offensive linemen at the end of the year, and Pro Bowls are not the best evaluation, but I use that as a term to basically say the best offensive linemen that there are.
Yeah,
typically, they are a part of good offensive lines. That's a dependent position in terms of the player to your right, the player to your left, the camaraderie that comes with knowing who those players are, not having a bunch of a state of flux where guys are in and out. And I say that to say that Brandon Scherff's a part of a bad offensive line. So it's going to water down your production, your value. It's going to make you look worse at times. Now, he doesn't happen to be next to one of the two worst offensive linemen that they have by way of the grading so far. But is Chase Roullier at center or Morgan Moses at right tackle, who I think is fine, but are either of those two guys players that are going to elevate his game necessarily? So that's the one thing I would say about Scherff in terms of suddenly he looks worse than he did a few years ago when you had Trent Williams and a better offensive line. The other thing, though, is this, and that is I think fans look at offensive linemen and they kind of grade them on their worst two or three plays. So the Washington offense was on the field, I think it was for 67 snaps, as an example. I know Scherff didn't play all of those. But the point is, a fan will see your two worst plays, your three worst plays, and they'll say you had a terrible game. Whereas you may have had 64 plays where you did your job and 15 plays where you played at an elite level and did more than your job and you got to the second level and you picked someone else up. And that's very rarely going to be noticed. So there is a disconnect at O-line, Danny, between maybe what fans think and the people in the building think more than at a lot of other positions, because you don't really see when they're doing great, but you see when they do something wrong.
Well, and in addition, he the caller brought up three sacks given up, and I think that's probably what's ascribed to him, whether it's Pro Football Focus or somebody else. And the thing that I've kind of learned through, you know, us having Kirk Cousins on the air and talking to, you know, really smart offensive people is we don't always know the complete picture, right? Let's say one of those was that was supposed to be a three-step drop and the ball was out, but a cornerback jumped a slant route. Well, now all of a sudden a guy's got a set for a three-step drop expecting the ball to be out, and it's not. Whose fault is that? Is it the receiver's fault? Is it Haskins' fault? Is it Scherff's fault? We don't know. I mean, there are times where you can obviously see it. Like in the early on in that Philadelphia game when they were down 17-0, Wes Martin got knocked back 8 yards into the backfield. That one you can tell, right? That there's no mystery there. There's no, well, it was a mix of coverage and this and that. They just thought, no. It was the guy in front of Wes Martin, picked him up, and moved him like I moved my toddler when he's being stubborn. That's what it looked like. So you know that one. But otherwise, it's always really difficult to ascribe blame to things. And so, again, I'm not ripping the call. I'm just simply saying we never know always the full story unless you're sitting there in the room with the coaches watching some of that film. And you're right. We pick out some of the bad plays. If you do something 98% of the time really, really well, but you give up two sacks, did you have a good game or a bad game? It's a philosophical question.
And to his point, I remember specifically two sacks where it looked like he had a bad play so far in the two games, which, don't get me wrong, it's bad. I mean, that's you're on pace for 16 in a season. You don't want that. But I think what you're saying is correct, which is there's nothing harder to assign credit or blame for than offensive line pressures and sacks just watching a live game on Fox. I mean, there's just no harder grading to be done as a fan than that, or as a radio host like you and I are, who happen to also be fans. Next, we'll give you our NFL power rankings. We'll compare and see how they look side by side. Top five teams in football. You're listening to The Fan. Guys, Grant Paulson from my friends at Lindsay Chevrolet. I've been telling you about Lindsay Chevy for a while because I am a believer in the offers that they provide. I have gotten my last four vehicles, me and my wife in the family, from Lindsay Chevy. My GM over there, Paul Smith, is your GM. He's going to give you great deals. He's going to hook you like he has hooked me. Lindsay Chevrolet's got Love It sales going on right now. That means they're making the deals that other dealers cannot and will not make. You can take it from me. They're going to save you more. Equinox's Blazers traverses 8,000 off Camaros, Malibus, Traxxas, 8,000 off Silverados, heavy and light duty pickups, whatever you want. They got it. 800 new Chevys available, up to 15,000 off. Ask for that love at Pricey. You know I love it. It works, you will as well. Go find it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.